Joining me in the studio is Michael Card. He's a political science professor at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion, and he joins us now for a closer look at how population shifts in the state can change the balance of power. Thanks for being here.
Well, I'm very pleased to be here. Thanks, Kara.
So let's talk a little bit about this shift in population and what that indicates to you as a political science professor.
Well, as Mr. Strubinger's story indicates, one of the issues that we're finding is that the people in the state are migrating towards the southeast and a little bit towards the I-29 corridor for a wide variety of reasons that we can talk about a little later. Mm-hmm. But the other part is some areas of the state are getting older as the younger people leave, and that means there's fewer births and more deaths. And that means that, as was suggested in the last story, District 28, which extends from the Missouri River to the Montana-Wyoming border, is probably going to head south.
Really, get a larger land base to encompass this.
Yeah, if we think about that particular district, right now it's 1/35 of the population, pretty close, because we have 35 legislative districts. That large district is over 20% of the state's land area.
Wow. So it's... districts are made up by the number of people in the area, right?
That's correct.
There's a, let's decide the number, divide it, and then that's kind of how it goes, and we draw the lines accordingly as best we can.
And again, as the story indicated, we try to keep county boundaries whole. That has become a little bit more challenging as we're seeing a wide variety in the range of population within the counties. You know, the average county population doesn't really tell the whole story. We have 200 some thousand people in Minnehaha County,
right,
and we have less than 1,000 people in Jones County out in West River, and so it becomes very difficult to have a single legislative district that is whole. I think right now Yankton County is the only county that is represented with its own set of representatives.
So does this then, the shift in redistricting and that kind of thing, does then that indicate that there's going to be an actual shift in power and political influence more towards the urban areas?
Well, if you, and you have listened to the legislature, you've heard many people say on the floor and in the lobbies, well, that's a Sioux Falls bill. And then some representatives and senators tend to not pay much attention to it being a Sioux Falls bill. On the other hand, if they engage in a tactic that political scientists call log rolling, well, I don't particularly care about that, but there are things I do care about, so let's trade votes. It has a bad name, but it may be an activity that we might see more of as the representatives and senators from more rural districts combine their votes to make sure that the people that they represent in peer and for state policy have their interests met.
But how long can that continue to go on to be the anti-Sioux Falls kind of attitude when there's more people showing up in peer from Sioux Falls?
Well, right now there's 20% of the state's population lives in Minnehaha County.
Mm-hmm.
If we add Lincoln County to it, we end up even more. If we look at the I-90 and I-29 corridors, the counties along those constitute about 2/3 of the state's population. I think we have to be creative in terms of solving the problems, but South Dakota is becoming more urban, and we have to start talking about rural South Dakota, which to the rest of the world sounds crazy because they might say that we're all rural, but we have more rural areas and more urban areas.
And so what happens, so we see a lot of the rural legislative representatives joining forces, but do we see that happening in the urban areas where they unite and have a common theme, or do we see them working against each other?
Well, I think we have a wide variety of competing values, and some of those are for stability and some are for change, and I'm not sure that the parties are as united as they might think they are.
Just two shades of red?
Two shades of red at least.
Huh. What does that mean?
Well, I think there are some who are much more conservative even than others. I think we still have a moderate Republican Party that we have had since statehood. You know, if we look at the state's political culture, most of the eastern part of the state was settled by Union war veterans and their families. Much of the western part of the state was not settled. It was inhabited by Native American tribes, mostly Lakota, Nakota, and Dakotas. But with the opening of the Black Hills, we saw mostly Confederate war veterans encompassing in the Black Hills. So we've seen a wide variety of perspectives since before statehood through Dakota Territory that continued on through many of the recession areas or times of our state. And what we've seen is when the ag economy is poor, when we tend to be isolationist in our foreign policy, our states, a couple of our states' historians like John Lauck and John Miller have indicated that's when Democrats tend to do well in elections. So that's a setup for 2018, although you look at the current makeup of the legislature and you'd say that's a long ways off from any real power. But I think that there are still a wide variety of perspectives. The Republican Party in South Dakota is truly a big tent.
And can the Democrats really unite and have momentum now?
Well, what I've told my
they could.
What I've told my students is they have to start local. Yeah. They have to get involved in school board. They have to get involved in municipal elections. Those aren't partisan elections, but they have to get involved so that they have a base, so that people know them, as opposed to going for higher levels of office. And if you believe in Democratic Party principles, you have to believe that some people, others want these. So you have to start expressing your principles through your decisions, even in nonpartisan elections.
Okay, so you have a handy dandy little map. And so we're seeing some population shifts happening in other areas too, where birth rates are booming and that kind of thing on the reservations.
Certainly, on the reservations and in the larger metropolitan areas.
Okay, and what is the reasoning? I mean, talk a little bit about some of the reasoning for the shift in the population that we're seeing.
Well, I think some of the reasoning is economic. As we see changes in agriculture, certainly the mechanization of agriculture has led to more land being needed to provide a minimum efficient size. We're seeing our ag economy is certainly down from where it was within the past 5 years. We're seeing more mechanization, which then requires more equipment, which means you have to borrow more, which means you have to plant more, have more cows, pigs, whatever it is, and there's less need for people on the farm. You know, 40 years ago when I graduated from high school, I had three families that had over 10 kids in their family in my small town. Almost all of them left, and many left the state, partly because even in the late 70s and early 80s, farm prices were down and there wasn't enough income to support everybody. So you had to leave the farm.
Well, plus you have two working probably spouses, and so we're going to live where my spouse can get a job and I'll just drive to the farm.
Well, and a lot of what we see is commutes in rural areas. I think the Census Bureau estimates that the average commute is 30 minutes in rural South Dakota. And, you know, it creates sort of a vicious cycle. Is once you commute 30 minutes, one of the next thing that happens is you start to buy your groceries in the place you work. That decreases the dollars flowing through because the grocery store hires people who might buy their car. They certainly buy groceries. They might spend money at the bowling alley. But if they're not spending money in town, they're spending it out of town. The economy in the community in which they live decreases.
And we're seeing a shift in higher education as well.
Well, we are. You know, my day job is to try to extend the resources of the University of South Dakota beyond the campus, and we're seeing an increase in people who are taking education not on the campuses. Our enrollment on the campuses in the state is relatively flat. The South Dakota Board of Regents publishes a fact book, and we can look there for the exact statistics. But what we're seeing is all forms of distance education are increasing. Part of it is if if you, you know, when I decided to get education, I had to leave Dewey County. Came a long ways to Vermilion back when the speed limit was 55. It took 12 hours to get here. When I went for further education, I had to leave. I left my job. I left my family. I left my support system. Distance education, I can keep my social structure. I can keep living in the same house with my family. I don't have to uproot them. I don't have to uproot my children. I don't have to leave my job. I can take part-time. It's just so much more convenient and flexible.
So the convenience part of it, and what impact is that having on shifting population?
Well, it, in some senses, it's enabling people in smaller communities to have access to higher education. If we're speaking specifically of education, it enables them to stay in their small town and earn either baccalaureate degrees or more advanced degrees. Some technical education is also available by distance, although it's more, I would say, hands-on and not quite as amenable yet with technology to distance environment. But, you know, Moore's law of computing that says that it's basically a logarithmic or an exponential scale. You know, if we think now that I have more computing power in the phone in my pocket than I had in the first IBM personal computer by a factor of probably 1,000.
Right. So if you had to wave, get out your little magic ball, what do you see the 2020 census looking like and doing in South Dakota?
Well, I think, as Mr. Boland suggested, I think there will be at least one more district in the Sioux Falls metropolitan area. As we've seen, it looks more like a hub-and-spoke system where they've gone out in different directions from the city of Sioux Falls to capture some of the surrounding area. I think the counties that are growing will start subsuming part of those rural areas. But we have a citizen legislature in South Dakota. That means you have to be back in your district. And you have to have cracker barrels and talk to people. And so in some senses, I think we'll still see the same level of representation that we see currently, which is fairly high. Our legislature is very accessible compared to a lot of other states, both in terms of seeing what's going on, you know, certainly South Dakota Public Broadcasting televising the stories, the recaps on the day, as well as providing audio recordings of testimony. There aren't a lot of states that have this level of access. But the people also have access, not only through the resources of South Dakota Public Broadcasting in conjunction with the Legislative Research Council, but also access to our individual legislators. Mm-hmm. But I also see more legislators combining together. You know, I mentioned 40 years ago, I graduated from high school, I was honored to be selected by my American Legion post to go to Boy State. And the Legion posts in the northwest area of the state got us all together so we would know who else was from northwest South Dakota. And we got together and sort of lobbied for each other running for office. I see more of that occurring in the South Dakota legislature.
Okay. Mike Card, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on the program. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. Thanks, Kara.